Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, we exchange the traditional one-year anniversary gifts. Calzones! It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I'm joined, as I am always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about the news from the week, including the first anniversary of Super Nintendo World. And then on Thursday, it's week two of Mario vs. Donkey Kong month, or there's a Nintendo Direct. We don't know yet. But Mark, in the meantime, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Patrick, in week one, last Thursday's episode of Mario vs. Donkey Kong month, you proclaimed that you had a catchphrase
for the
month.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's right. Sorry. Oh, banana.
Yes. From Donkey Kong 64. Yes. And you were like, oh, Mark, what is your catchphrase? And I kind of choked. In the moment, I was really like, my mind went blank. I couldn't think of any catchphrase. I was scrambling. I was thinking, should mine, since yours is a Donkey Kong catchphrase, should mine be a Mario catchphrase? So instead, I picked something that was not a catchphrase. I said, this is basically what I said. Quote, my catchphrase is me turning my hat backwards, or no, throwing my hat on the ground and stomping on it, which is a reference to Diddy Kong from the Donkey Kong series, which, of course, that's not a catchphrase. That's like a thing that you do. So it's an action.
What do we call those? What do we call those sort of signature gestures, like the Carol Burnett tugging her ear? Like what are those? They're not catchphrases. Are they catch gestures?
Yeah, maybe they're a catch. Yeah, that's interesting. A tick, a nervous tick.
Posing it to the audience, what is it called? Email us nintendocartridgesociety@gmail.com.
Today, I want to rectify that, and I want to give myself a proper, true catchphrase.
I love this.
Okay. And so that catchphrase is, imagine a goalpost.
This is not how most imagine a scenario.
Imagine a goalpost where the horizontal bar is moving, up and down, and I'm running towards it, and I jump through the goalpost, and then music begins to play, and I'm walking, and the screen begins to fade to black, and I make the peace sign. That's my catchphrase. The problem is it's the same issue.
I don't understand what you're saying. I know you're doing the end of every level of Super Mario World, but that's still just a gesture.
Interesting.
Your catchphrase could still just be like, bow, whap.
Could it be? Could a catchphrase just be a noise?
I don't know. I mean, mine is just saying banana.
You're right. And what is language except just noise that has been that is meaning put to it?
Mark, you've got now 2 days to work on.
Okay. I'll keep workshopping it. I'll keep workshopping
It's all right. That's a second catch gesture or whatever our audience decides that's called. So if we ever need those, we're starting to bank them up.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
Okay. What are we doing? You can check out our Patreon if you're interested in our once-a-month episodes of mini-series that we are putting out. You can go to patreon.com/Nintendo Cartridge Society. And if you're interested in supporting us at the 8-bit or 16-bit level, you get access to those things. Mark, we just talked about
The Legend of Zelda the Minish Cap in the first episode of NCS Arcade, where Patrick and I are playing games available on Nintendo Switch Online and Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack that we have never beaten before. But now we have beaten The Legend of Zelda the Minish Cap, and we talked all about it. And for February, later this month, we're going to be talking about Jet Force Gemini, the rare game from the rare developed game for the Nintendo 64, which should be interesting, if nothing else.
And yes, an experience. I wonder, we both, part of the setup for NCS Arcade is that we're playing games that we've never beaten before. I don't know that necessarily we have to beat these games.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, I think we should at least try to hold ourselves to that standard.
Sounds to me like somebody's played a little bit of Jet Force Gemini.
I can't talk about it now. But yes, I did play a little bit of Jet Force Gemini this weekend. It made me wonder, like, well, why do we do this? Why? We'll talk way more about the game. I'm not as negative on it as I'm sounding. I'm playing into it for bits. But yes, if you would like to play Jet Force Gemini along with us, you should do so. And we'll be talking about it later this month. And then you should get in our Discord, whether you are a patron or not. You just got to email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com. And you can join in on all the conversations, including the conversation about what you call those catch gestures. Mark, last thing before we get into what we've been playing this week, I just want to remind everyone that I've got a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book coming out in comic book stores just a couple weeks, February 21st, the issue one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles source book written by me is going to be at your local comic book store. So very exciting. Pre-order that if you are interested. Mark, let's get into what we've been playing this week. Okay, so I want to hear first, before we talk about any games, I want to hear about the saga of you getting a new 3DS battery.
Okay, yeah. So I saw online that the official Nintendo store was selling 3DS and 3DS XL batteries for $15. Plus, you have to pay for the shipping and tax and stuff. So I think in all, it came to about $25. But my Nintendo 3DS, the battery on it has been flaky for a while. And because I never bought a new 3DS XL, which I regret deeply, and now they're super expensive, I am like, okay, I should at least spend the $25, get a new battery, have this thing, preserve its life for a little bit longer. So I did that, and it finally arrived, and over the weekend, I replaced it, which was a super easy process. You just, remove two screws, off the back, and pop the battery in. But as soon as I did that, I, charged it all the way up, turned it on, and it reminded me that I have all these games on my 3DS that I bought panic buying when the 3DS eShop was announced it was going to close. And so there were all these, best of lists, hidden gems and things. And so I have a bunch of games on there, and I don't think I ever played it, maybe just for a little bit before, but one of the games I had on here was Harmonite, the Game Freak developed 2D side scroller that is, it's like a rhythm game. So Ooh. You are running through levels and in time to the music, I'm pretty early in it. So you're slashing at enemies in time to the music, or you're jumping in time to the music. And the more in tune you are, the better you perform. And it's really fun. It's very, I'm early, so maybe it evolves beyond what it is currently, but it's fairly simple. It seems like it was developed on a small budget. There is a framing device, story, but it's just told through still images that kind of look like comic book panels. It's very simple, and the gameplay is fairly simple, but the music is really good, and it's pretty addictive. I'd been curious about it for a while. Really, I think the first time I even knew about it was because in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, there was a spirit or something for Harmonite. Oh. And so I think there's a Harmonite song in there, possibly. I really can't remember exactly, but that's what kind of sparked my interest. And it's fun. It's cute. I'm glad I picked it up. And But I just have so many treasures in my 3DS that I totally forgot about. So
yeah.
I still don't know when I'm going to have time to play them, but they're there. And now I have a new battery to preserve it for a little bit longer.
So they'll always be there for a couple more years.
Yep.
That's really cool. And way frustrating that if I want to play Harmonite, I can't.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if it was ever released physically or if it's just a download, an eShop game.
I mean, that feels like a Game Freak developed like smaller experience that on 3DS. Like, yeah, that sounds like it would be just a digital thing. Well, that's really cool. I'm glad that you had the foresight to grab it before the eShop closed, and then got to like discover it again, just sitting on your home screen there.
Yeah, I realized I have a ton of RPGs on there that I have a hard time imagining I will ever play. But
like
they're
what?
There.
What are the RPGs you got?
Oh man, I don't even know. I wish I had it in arm's length, because I would open it up and maybe
you've got,
next week.
You've got some of the Dragon Quest remakes on there, right?
Well, I have Dragon Quest VII because I bought that, and I think I never even got to the first battle because there was a lot of prologue in that game. But I do have I do have Dragon Quest VII. There's one where it's called like Attack of the Monday Monsters or Friday. I can't remember what it is. I really maybe next week we can do
a full
accounting.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been sort of dabbling with a couple different games this week. One is just a browser game that I discovered last night while I was procrastinating on something I was working on. Mark, do you know Infinite Craft?
No.
Infinite Craft is a game that you can Google it, everyone, when you are just sitting at a web browser. You start off with just four words, earth, fire, wind, water. And you click and drag the words like onto like a little empty field, and you can keep like mixing things together. And so like you'll do wind and water, and you'll get rain. And it's like, okay, now I can take like rain and fire and get, then this probably isn't right, but like volcano, right? And so you just, and then you can take volcano and storm, and you'll get eruption, right? So like it just, it's this like kind of logic thing, and there's no game to it really. There's no like objective, but you can just start like mixing things together, and I'm not sure how it generates these connections between things, but like I was messing around with it for long enough, and like, you know, I quickly got like a unicorn and a Pegasus, and then I started getting like Greek gods, and then like I started mixing them with like darker things, and then I started getting to like vampires and Frankenstein, you know, through like a couple little twists, I got Darth Vader, and so like you can just keep mixing these things, and sometimes like the more esoteric you get, the stranger of a creation it spits back out to you. So from Darth Vader, I started getting all these other like weird Darth, like Darth blank, right? So it'd be like Darth volcano, and like, what is that? Why does this think that's a thing? And so it's just like it's just a strange little like logic toy to play with. So Infinite Craft, if you're interested in playing with that.
Yeah, that does sound cool. How did you hear about it?
I think I saw it on Twitter. I think someone just saying like, hey, I look at this weird thing I crafted in Infinite Craft. So yeah, it's and it, you know, uses cookies, so it remembers, you know, even if you like click away, it'll remember what words you've unlocked. So you can always just like keep crafting stuff.
That sounds cool.
And then yes, I did turn on the Nintendo 64 NSO library so I could just like check out Jet Force Gemini. I just wanted like a little bit of a like, here's what this game is like. I will save my thoughts about it for the episode, but I couldn't help myself from playing a couple levels of Dr. Mario 64. What a fun presentation of that game. It's so weird. There's a story mode in Dr. Mario 64. I don't know if you know this, Mark, where like you're chasing Wario around, and like you end up having to play like individual rounds of Dr. Mario against like snakes and spiders and stuff. It doesn't make any sense, but it's Dr. Mario, so who cares? And then two more things. One is that we just started a new like season or a new event in Pikmin Bloom, Lunar New Year. I forget every time we start like a new event like this, that fighting the event mushrooms when you're this early in the season is so hard, because you have so few of the like special Pikmin that are like three times, or it's more like 10 times as strong as the other Pikmin in fighting those special mushrooms. But it's been very good to team up with other listeners who like we've all gotten in the habit now of inviting each other to mushroom battles, which is super fun and like just makes me feel like we're connected and trying to work on these things together.
Yeah, I really like that added feature. And I've got to say, if you're a listener who is listening to what Patrick just said and totally confused, fair, but intrigued, also fair.
Also fair.
I would say check out Pikmin Bloom. There's a whole channel in the Discord where we share our friend codes and team up. It's a good time.
Yeah, and if you are, you know, teamed up with us in like the steps challenge or the flower planting challenge, you will get a lot of stuff to help you level up faster. You know, it's a good little boost to be playing it with friends. And then the last thing, and then I will probably do a little bit more, another code chatter here. I played the Mario vs. Donkey Kong demo, which is available right now on Switch. It's incredibly short. It's four levels. But I played it all with Sarah because I was very interested in how the co-op for this would play. And it felt a lot like when we would play co-op Captain Toad, because it's all like, you know, just based on like Captain Toad in a lot of ways is an extension of the Mario versus Donkey Kong formula, right? Where there's no platforming in Captain Toad, but like it's the same sort of like positional, like puzzly kind of thing. I'm very much looking forward to that game coming out and seeing how much of it I can make Sarah play with me.
Are you playing as two Mario? What?
No. What? Mario and Toad for some reason.
Oh, okay.
It's a it's bizarre. Like there is a second player, Mario. His name is Luigi.
Interesting. Tell me more.
It's also weird that it's not Captain Toad.
Is it like Blue Toad, Yellow Toad, Regular Toad?
It's like Regular Toad. It's like Red Toad.
Huh.
Yeah. And there is a point where the Yellow Toad and the Blue Toad from the New Super Mario Brothers Wii and the Wii U version, where they those like appear as characters in the game.
Huh.
Yeah. So lots of toads in this thing. I'm very much looking forward to that full game's release. It honestly took us like 8 minutes to play through the
The
demo, like really really fast. Another code recollection. Mark, how you doing?
I actually want to hear first from you, like, how are you doing? Because last week, struggling a little bit, I think fair to say.
Yeah. And I've put more time into it, and I think I'm struggling a little less. I'm like, I'm in the house now. I'm like in that mansion, which I was not before.
Oh, okay.
So like, I was just sort of like, you know, wandering around this island and like being sort of untethered from time, because there's like a flashback and, you know, whatever. And once I was actually like in the mansion and solving puzzles, I was like, oh, this is like soft boy Resident Evil. And as soon as I like kind of put it in those terms, I was like, oh, I can have fun with this. I'm enjoying it more, but I'm still like three or four chapters into the first game. Do you know how many chapters there are?
I can't remember off the top of my head. Okay. It wasn't that long, all things told. So I'm in the second game, and I have no idea how far I am into it, but I've played for quite some time. I have no tentpole to say like I'm at this point, and I can't even really hazard a guess as to how much progress I've made, but it is wild. So the second game is significantly better.
Oh, okay.
But it's also like it's interesting how different it is. Just like in scope, like the amount of characters you're talking about, the amount of things that are going on. Like that first game is so linear in that, the story is so simple. I should say better. It's like, okay, I need to do this thing. I am in this mansion. And this is where everything is going to happen, basically, is like in this mansion. There are like, there's a lot of like complications in the second one, a lot of characters, and so characters will like disappear for a while. The game is still very linear in that I feel like I always know where I'm supposed to be going. That's pretty clear. But you'll be going there, and then like somebody will pop up and you'll be like, oh, I'm going to follow this path for a little bit before I go back to the... Yeah, it's difficult to explain. One thing I think it was last week we were laughing about, there aren't that many games about a 14-year-old girl who is best friends with a ghost boy. And I guess they're not really best friends. I'm being flippant. They're not best friends.
But they're friends. They become friends.
They become friends. In the second game, there's a part that really made me... It does acknowledge the stuff that happened in the first game to a degree, more of a degree than, like, in the beginning. And then some, like, ghosty stuff starts to pop up and you're like, okay. But I don't know how much that plays into it, because so far, not that much. But there's another boy that she meets in this game, and it's not spoilers, but she's like, he is explaining to her his story and why he's doing the things he's doing. And she's really skeptical. She's like, oh, your dad, this is, I guess, technically a spoiler. Like, oh, your dad was kidnapped? That's really hard for me to believe. And I'm like, girl, you just spent an entire game like talking to a ghost.
It's still Ashley in the second game?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the second game is vastly, vastly better.
Huh. All right. Well, I'm going to press through the first game. And you know, I would say press. Like I am enjoying it. I just occasionally do like hit that wall where I'm like, and now I'm bored.
Yeah. I think that's fair. That's totally fair.
All right, well, cool. I'm glad we can keep checking in on another code recollection. Mark, that's what we've been playing this week. Let's get into the new releases and what we might be playing next week.
You know, Patrick, there are dry weeks for new releases, and then there are dry weeks for new releases. And I feel like
which would you say this is?
I would say this is the second. This is a bone dry week for new releases.
Okay, look, at the time of recording, we don't know if there's going to be a Nintendo Direct this week. If there is going to be one, we're going to drop our other plans for Mario vs. Donkey Kong month and cover that. But just looking at this like list of absolute like wet noodle new releases, I'm just like, we gotta have a Direct, right? There has to be a Direct with like two decent indie games that are, you know, released today, or like a Metroid Prime 2 remake out today or something like that. Because like, otherwise we're looking at Thursday and it's like, are you gonna play Cannibal Abduction or Mustache in Hell? Like, what's going on?
I mean, I guess we are 1 week, 2 weeks away from Mario versus Donkey Kong.
Yeah, week and a half, I think.
Yeah, and so there is an oasis on the horizon, but we're definitely wandering the desert right now.
Yes, it definitely feels like wandering the desert right now. It's also just like, I know this is always almost always the case, unless there's like a rare, like outstanding, you know, something that's like coming to us. But we never know Nintendo's year at the beginning of the year, right? Last year was an exception in that we knew that Tears of the Kingdom was coming, and like 2020 is an exception because Animal Crossing was delayed, right? But like normally at this point, we don't know what the rest of the year is going to look like. And that's just where we are right now, and it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we have Princess Peach Showtime to look forward to next month, and then sometime in 2024, we're getting Thousand Year Door remake, but I guess there's like
Luigi's Mansion. Yeah.
But yeah, it is weird to think that even in with the February Direct, it wasn't until June that we knew about Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Right.
So, right. You know, yeah. If there's a Nintendo Direct this month, who even knows how much it'll actually end up telling us. But
it is fun to live in this like the state before you know the next thing has been announced.
Yeah. Yep. It's fun and a little bit uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I was going to draw a parallel to something, but I don't think it's appropriate. all right. Well, let's get out of the new releases. Which brings us to a regular segment on our show. It is time for 433. In 1952, American composer John Cage wrote a piece called 433, wherein a performer or group of performers didn't play their instruments for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. For the purposes of this show, our instruments are talking about Nintendo. So, for the duration of one performance, 433, Mark and I will talk about something not at all Nintendo-related, thus fulfilling the contract of the piece. Mark, we had gotten like halfway through a list of the most popular beverages in America and said that we would come back to it, but we're not going to come back to it. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to be going to the Ringer's top 50 fast food items list and seeing whether the items in their top 10 would make it into our top 10.
That's right. And this is across all of their picks. So it's not breaking out fries, burgers, chicken, tacos, etc. into different groups. It is yes. all mashed together.
And I got to say, if you are like the folks at The Ringer did a bang up job with this list. It's just fastfood.theringer.com. There are graphics and everything is like very nicely laid out. Like they do good work over there.
Yeah. Good job.
Okay. So the top 10, let's start at the bottom at number 10. The bacon cheeseburger at Five Guys. Do you think this would be in your top 10 or no?
Possibly controversial opinion. I don't think anything at Five Guys would make my top 10.
So here's what I'll say about that is I've not been a vegetarian my entire life, but I have, you know, maybe for the last decade, and I have, as a result, never had anything from Five Guys. Mm-hmm. I've never been. They don't have a veggie burger.
Oh, yeah. And it probably their expansion was after you became vegetarian. Yeah. For me, it just doesn't really do it. So, yeah. No. Not making my top 10.
Okay. Rejected bacon cheeseburger. Okay. Number 9, a McFlurry from McDonald's.
I'm casting my mind back to the last time I had a McFlurry because it's been many years.
Here's the thing. For me, it doesn't make it in because if I'm going to get ice cream from McDonald's, I'm either going to get a shake or a soft serve. Mm. I think either of those from McDonald's is better than a McFlurry. And I understand the McFlurry's great, but it comes with that weird spoon, and I don't need that in my life.
Oh, see, I think the weird space-age spoon where I think that's what they, like, connect to the machine to
that is true,
stir yes. it or something is pretty uh-huh. cool. But not making my top 10.
Okay, all right. Next up, number 8, Wendy's Frosty.
All right, so Wendy's Frosty is going to make my top 10.
It goes in mine as well. It's you know, there's no dairy in a Frosty.
I did not know that.
Frosties are vegan.
Oh, it's kind of the perfect dessert.
It's kind of the perfect dessert. I think Frosties are good. Although, just the classic chocolate Frosty. I know they have, like, other flavors. I don't need that. I get out of town with that.
Yeah. Also, I personally am not a fries and Frosty person.
Oh, that's good, though.
Yeah, it's just not my thing.
All right.
I'll just have fries separately, please.
Number 7, we are on a little bit of an ice cream tear here. The Dairy Queen Blizzard.
Huh. I guess technically Dairy Queen is fast food.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Because like in some places at least, it's like a legit restaurant, like a fast food restaurant with burgers and stuff.
Right. But I feel like that's a small percentage of Dairy Queens though, right? Like aren't they usually just like the cool treats, no hot eats?
Most of the ones, at least around here, are. So are we saying, do we disqualify this?
It's disqualified. Okay. Dairy Queen, you've been DQ'd. okay, no, number 6, curly fries from Arby's.
I don't know. This is, here's the struggle I'm going through.
Yeah.
Is that I'm thinking, would my this doesn't feel like it would fit in my top 10 list, but what would go in my top 10 list of fast food
right.
items?
Do you have a French fries that you would put in your top 10? Like no, McDonald's, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. I like just a classic McDonald's French fry. I do like a steak fry. So the idea of...
not from a fast food restaurant. You don't want fast food steak fries.
The idea.
Okay, all right.
Because, should we go through what the remaining items are?
Sure, just so we know what they are.
Yeah, so a chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. Chicken from Popeyes.
Just chicken in general from Popeyes. McDonald's French fries is number 3.
Double-double from In-N-Out is number 2.
And waffle fries from Chick-fil-A, number 1.
I honestly, other than a Frosty, I don't know that any of these would make my top 10. But
not even the McDonald's fries?
Oh, no, the McDonald's fries. You're right.
There's no spicy chicken sandwich from Wendy's on here.
Yeah, that's a big miss.
That's a big miss. It's probably just lower down.
Let's see where it goes.
Oh, no, that's they got the spicy chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A.
At number 6, though, in chicken. We're talking just chicken now.
Oh, I see.
They have the spicy chicken sandwich. In all picks, the spicy chicken sandwich doesn't show up until... Wow, it's disrespected by the cheesy gordita crunch from Taco Bell. Just 2 tacos for 99 cents from Jack in the Box. It's between
it's number 20. Yeah,
it's number 21 is chicken tenders from Popeyes, which is different from just chicken from Popeyes,
chicken.
I guess. And then number 19 is 2 tacos for 99 cents. I feel like this is disrespect for the spicy chicken sandwich from Wendy's.
Here's how I know this list is whack: is number 7 is a pretzel from Auntie Anne's Pretzels. That's a bad pretzel. All right. We were accompanied today by a timer on my phone. All right, Mark, let's get into the news.
All right. We are approaching the 1-year anniversary of Super Nintendo World opening at Universal Studios Hollywood. And here's what Universal is doing to celebrate. A new power-up cafe is opening at, like, near the main entrance of the park in like the New York Street area. Officially opens on February 15th.
Yeah. And part of the reason that it's relevant that it's like in the New York Street area is the park is sort of divided up into like an upper level and a lower level. And you can only enter at the upper level. Like a lot of the cool stuff is at the bottom, but like it takes a long time for you to get there. Like you legitimately have to stand on an escalator for like, I don't know, 10 minutes to get down there. Bringing some of that Mario stuff up to the main level makes it more visible, makes it more accessible, and all that stuff.
So at the Power Up Cafe, here's what you can get: a super mushroom calzone, a 1-Up mushroom calzone,
which is the super mushroom calzone but with veggies instead of meat,
and then a fire flower pretzel.
It's a fire flower shaped pretzel served with chipotle cheese, mustard, and white queso dipping sauces. These food items sound great to me.
And then superstar popcorn, butter popcorn topped with edible glitter.
Come on.
Pretty good. Another reason why I feel like this stuff stands out is Super Mario or Super Nintendo World at Universal Studios Hollywood is tiny. It's so tiny. So they don't have space for like a popcorn cart or anything. So this is
yes.
just another opportunity for them to sell that stuff. But it also...
Right. These are all like travel-in foods, right? Like if you go to the Toad Cafe, they're going to give you like a bowl of soup.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah,
or like
that's
a plate
right.
of spaghetti. These are real menu items. Whereas if you're going to this the new Power Up Cafe, that it is like something that you can grab and go and, you know, like... sit in Duff Gardens or whatever.
Yeah, for the Mario on the go, the
that's right.
Power Up Cafe. There are also going to be drinks there. The drop in the power up sugar.
I think you can.
What?
Yeah, I'm not sure what this is. I think you can like put power up sugar shapes into any drink.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So I think the first thing listed here is not actually a product. I think it is just an enhancement to the other product.
I see. I think the product is power up sugar shapes.
Yes.
And then you can drop them in anything, presumably water, to change the color and flavor.
That's your first pick is water. That's the
Well, if we had for 4:33 this week done beverages again, we maybe I think water would have been a popular choice, but you're right, we'll never know. Super Mushroom Fizz, which is a lemon lime soda. All right, I'm reading all the details for these. Because otherwise it's just a list of like things. Mushroom Fizz is a lemon lime soda with strawberry popping pearls and a strawberry super mushroom power up. Then there is the 1-Up Mushroom Fizz, which is a lemon lime soda with green apple popping pearls and a lime 1-Up mushroom power up.
So these must be the aforementioned power up sugar shapes.
No, I think the sugar shapes go into these drinks.
But this is what I'm saying is the 1-Up Mushroom Fizz includes a lime 1-Up mushroom power up. I think that's a sugar shape that they put in it.
Ah, I understand. I understand.
We'll decode this yet.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, we have two more. The Fire Flower Fizz, which is a lemon lime soda with orange popping pearls and a mango habanero fire flower power up. Interesting.
That's cool. That sounds good.
And then a Superstar Fizz, which is a lemon lime soda with lemon popping pearls and a mango pineapple superstar power up.
Now, was the Superstar Fizz, was that available at the Toad Cafe? We had some sort of fizz. I think it was the Superstar one.
Yeah, we did have something, and it had like those like popping pearl things.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's right.
So maybe this is a variation on something that's already available. Plus, not food related, there's a new Gold Mario power up band that will be available in the park and at Universal Studios stores on February 17th. And then a one year anniversary button will be available at guest relations inside Universal Studios Hollywood, also available starting February 17th while supplies last.
But this is like one of those buttons where you would go like when it's your birthday, right? And they like write your name on a button and hand it to you.
I think so. But I think I feel like all of this stuff is a testament to how much Super Nintendo World has transformed, like, maybe not transformed, but Universal Studios Hollywood is doing very well. Like Super Nintendo World has like people are spending a ton of money because they're buying like the early entry to go to Super Nintendo World. They're buying the power up bands. They're buying, you know, the soup at Toad Cafe. And so now they're just like, well, how, like you said, how can we get this out of Super Nintendo World, which is really congested, and use that halo effect to increase sales elsewhere in the park. Yeah, I think Super Nintendo World has been a big hit for them.
It's interesting that the new power-up band is just like a Gold Mario one. Like, it's not another character, and I get that that would be like a lot of work on the back end. This way, all they really have to do is just like paint the power-up bands yellow, right? In some ways I'm like, no, oh, it feels like a missed opportunity.
That's kind of how I feel about like the merchandise for the land in general, where everything is just kind of basic. That is something I hope will change. There have been rumors since basically they were building it that they were trying to find ways to to put part of the Donkey Kong expansion that's coming to Japan and Epic Universe in Orlando to fit like something like that down there, because space is so limited at Universal Studios Hollywood, because it is still a working movie studio most of the space down there. So it'll be interesting if they are able to find some space for it.
And like, isn't it sandwiched between the Transformers ride and like Jurassic World? Like, you can't really touch those rides.
Right. And then I think like behind that is the,
like, an office building.
Right. Yeah. Right? Or like some sound stages or something. So
yeah,
it really, you know, cause they haven't expanded the Harry Potter area at all.
Right.
And
right.
So yeah, they're just really landlocked, but hopefully it would be cool if they can find some way to build some more stuff for Super Nintendo World.
So you want to come with me on the 17th to pick up our Gold Mario bands?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then we'll have to try this Fire Flower Fizz.
The only I actually am genuinely tempted by these food items, and I wish that you could get them without going into the park.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wish you could get them at Universal City Walk.
I mean, it also has been a year since we've been to the That's Super true. Nintendo World at Hollywood, so maybe we're due.
We might be due. We might be due.
Speaking of which, in last week's episode, man, it's just back-to-back episodes, news episodes, mm-hmm. where we're talking theme park stuff, which is near and dear to my heart. At the end of last week's episode, we were talking about rumors of Zelda rides coming to Universal Studios Orlando, and we were talking about Universal's third theme park that they're building there called Epic Universe. And in that episode, when we were recording it last Monday night, I said, none of this has been confirmed yet, but this is what the rumors, you know, say are going to go into Universal Studios, to Epic Universe in Orlando. And then the day that the episode released on Tuesday, they revealed everything that's going into Epic Universe. And it was exactly what those rumors
said. It was
like
5 hours after the episode posted. Yeah.
Well, I'm bringing that up because, so the person, when I say the rumors are out there, it's because there is a YouTuber, and I think she also does podcasts. There's a website. It's called Park Stop. I believe I'm getting that right, but her name is Alicia Stella, and she is like on top of all of this Universal stuff. And the rumor right now that I think is exciting for Epic Universe is that at like part of the expansion plans after the theme park opens is a Luigi's Mansion section for Epic Universe, which seems like that would be very fun to see their spin on kind of like, I'm imagining the Haunted Mansion maybe like a kind of like one of those like Buzz Lightyear shooting rides, you know, because you have like a vacuum cleaner or something. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of potential there. A Professor Egad animatronic. Oh,
I would love that.
He's like explaining to you how you're supposed to control the ride when in his little babbly language.
Yeah, he's like,
oof, so good. Possibilities that would are endless.
I also like that if Luigi's Mansion is going in as part of like Epic Universe and you've got like the Dark Universe section right there, that like maybe Luigi is joining the Dark Universe franchise of films.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, I wanted to make sure I got it right. So it's called, the website is OrlandoParkStop.com, and the YouTube is Theme Park Stop. Wait, so maybe.
Maybe you were just finding the Orlando like branch of her website.
Yeah. No, okay. But yes, I think it is OrlandoParkStop.com, and the YouTube is Theme Park Stop. Anyways, if you're into theme park stuff and you want to know rumors about what's going on at Universal Orlando, that is a great place to check out. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about rumors that Xbox Studios games like Hi-Fi Rush and potentially Sea of Thieves might be making their way to Nintendo platforms. Since then, the leak/rumor mill has really been going wild with reporting and speculation that Microsoft is considering bringing most of its exclusive titles, a lot of its exclusive titles, or titles that were assumed to be exclusive to as many platforms as possible, including Switch and PlayStation.
Yeah, so I when I wrote up this little piece of news, I said all considering bringing all exclusive titles, and I get that being like a stumbling block of being like, we don't necessarily want to say that they're saying all, but some of the rumors include games like the Gears of War series, and other rumors include like the new Indiana Jones game. So like, it does seem like there's no category of Microsoft exclusive that's off the table here.
Yeah, I mean, Starfield is in those rumors too, right? That apparently there's like a big update that is coming soon, and the rumors is that the game will arrive on PlayStation 5 when that happens. And the chatter has gotten to for Hi-Fi Rush, somebody data mined that there were like new outfits in the game that seemed to fit the theme of the PlayStation 5. Like, it's like the PlayStation blue, and the word is like, and it the t-shirt says like we're finally here or something like that. And then Then it's the Nintendo Red, and the shirt is like playing on the go, or like something heavily seems to indicate that something is in the works there. The chat, like, there's been so much chatter about it that Microsoft is holding some sort of event next week that where they're going to be talking about strategy. Phil Spencer, Microsoft Gaming's boss, took to Twitter on Monday saying, quote, "We're listening and we hear you. We've been planning a business update event for next week where we look forward to sharing more details with you about our vision for the future of Xbox. Stay tuned."
That feels so sweaty to me. If you're putting out a statement next week, like, just wait and put out the statement next week. Who cares? Let people talk right now. Who cares?
And do you think that it's a statement, or do you think that it's going to be like a presentation?
Well, yes. I mean, I think probably is a presentation. This, like, "we're listening and we hear you" makes it sound as though what we're going to see next week is going to be a response from Xbox. And even if that is what's happening, they shouldn't be messaging it as such. They should just be like, "here are our plans."
I am really curious to see what form it takes, because like the what is the exact wording? A business update event makes it sound like more like a strategy presentation, right? Like,
sure.
not like a glossy you know, like Nintendo Direct or State of Play, or I am blanking on what Microsoft calls their events. They may just be like a presents or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a developer underscore direct.
Yeah. But, you know, like, it doesn't seem like we're in for a lot of necessarily like, I don't know. Is it a lot of like sizzle reels and game announcements, or is it a, you know, like, the way that it's put makes it sound like we have some news to break to you, Xbox fans, and we don't know that you're going to like it, but here's the kind of like direction.
It is weird because it does like, it speaks the sort of language of like the entitled fan that like demands to know what your like business strategy is, where it's like, well, okay, hold on. Like, why? You know what I mean? It's just like there's some things that like happen on the business side that like aren't meant to be part like enjoyed by the fans, and like here's Phil Spencer like directly speaking to fans being like, "don't worry fans, we have a business update for you."
Right. It does feel like a contradiction in that way, where, you know, you don't, yeah, you would, it yeah, it's interesting times at Xbox.
Totally.
I think the thing that has me intrigued is, do you think this it would make sense if something like Hi-Fi Rush was coming to Switch, that they would be part of a Nintendo Direct, right? That would be pretty cool, especially if there were no rumors of it ahead of time. A pretty cool announcement for to see it in a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, I agree.
And so it's like, I don't know. Do you think that this business update event would be scheduled for like after a Nintendo Direct where it's announced, before a Nintendo Direct where it's announced, with no regard for a Nintendo Direct? Maybe it's not announced in a Nintendo Direct. It just seems like with the rumors of one, or I guess the expectation of one, I don't even know if there's really rumors that one is coming, but the expectation that Nintendo Direct will be happening pretty soon. The timing that they're also going to give an update around the same time that a Nintendo Direct is rumored just makes me wonder if there's some connection
there. If they're
tied
to each other. Yeah. No, I mean, that makes perfect sense. And like, is a, you know, I was citing the weak lineup of new games this week as evidence that the Direct would be this week. But, you know, this sort of note from Phil Spencer makes me think like, oh yeah, maybe it could just happen that they have to like synchronize these announcements a little bit more closely. But yeah, it's it'll be fascinating to see like how this plays out and what like Microsoft, you know, they've been so like aggressively accumulating all these like game development studios, and like you know, they're huge now, right? Like there are so many developers that work directly for Microsoft, and it's just interesting that they're like kind of pivoting themselves into not being like the biggest first party publisher and just being like the biggest publisher of games, period.
Yeah, which feels like such a strange place for like Microsoft. I mean, I guess they do software elsewhere, and hardware isn't really like a huge part of their business, but it just feels weird to be like, ah, yes, like Microsoft's big hard like software. You have Office, you have, you know, Outlook, you have Call of Duty. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I think in that way it sort of makes sense, right? Like when you think about it in terms of like, are they interested in getting you playing on their hardware, or are they interested in getting you integrated into their system of things, right? Like at the end of the day, it's going to be just about driving people to Game Pass, right? Like that's, they put all of their first party games on there like day and date, and if they just are like, look, the only places you can do Game Pass are on PC or on Xbox, but you can buy the games elsewhere, that's probably as good of a motivator to get people to buy the systems as making games exclusive to the system, right? It doesn't feel like a bad strategic business update event. The strategy feels sound to me, but you know, we'll see how that plays out for them.
I hope that if it is tied to a Nintendo Direct, that they're literally back to back, so it's like the State of the Union and then the response to the State of like.
Yes. Marco Rubio trying to drink from little bottles of water. How old is that reference now? I don't even know. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do. Also, announced in last week's PlayStation State of Play, Sonic Cross Shadow Generations was revealed to be an upcoming title for Switch this fall. So it's coming to multi-platforms, including Switch. It seems like this is mostly a remaster / remake of the 10-year-old Sonic Generations, but with some new Shadow the Hedgehog like levels or content or something.
It's not totally clear to me what it. But you know, and anytime there's like a Sonic game, like Sonic Mania did this, right, where they were like, and now you can play as a, there's like a squirrel, right? A yellow squirrel, and then like another guy, an armadillo maybe. I don't know these characters. But like they added new like levels and ways to interact with levels. So I wonder if that is like, if this is like that, or if it's bigger. It's not totally clear to me.
Or is it like the remake from last year of Kirby that had that like Magalore side story thing?
Yeah, who knows?
But here's the copy. Shadow the Hedgehog is back with classic and modern Sonic in Sonic Cross Shadow Generations, an all-new collection featuring two unique experiences. Play as Shadow the Hedgehog in a brand new story campaign, featuring never-before-seen powers and abilities that prove why he's known as the ultimate life form.
Sure.
I'll take your word for it. Sonic Cross Shadow Generations also includes a complete remaster of the classic hit Sonic Generations, featuring newly remastered versions of iconic 2D and 3D stages with upgraded visuals and new bonus content.
So I know one of the like hooks of Sonic Generations is that it included like classic Sonic and modern Sonic. Does this include just one version of Shadow though? There's no like classic Shadow.
I don't think there's any classic Shadow. I think he's a 3D creation.
I'm saying, can't we like retcon it? Can't you give me like a cute version of Shadow the Hedgehog?
That'd be fun. That'd be cool.
Anyway, new Sonic game incoming this fall.
Tokyo RPG Factory, the Square Enix subsidiary and developer of RPGs like I Am Setsuna and Lost Fear, has been like absorbed back into Square Enix.
Yeah, officially. Strange. I don't totally get what's happening here.
Yeah. The last game released by Tokyo RPG Factory was 2019's Oninaki. And so Square Enix like retains the rights to sell the games or make sequels. I don't know. It is kind of a weird situation, but you posed the question here, Patrick. How does this feed into the narrative we were talking about last week with Square Enix deciding they don't really want to dabble in AA games? And they are either putting more resources into like blockbuster titles, Or maybe there is no and or.
No, I think that's really it.
I think that's just it.
I think this like kind of perfectly is in line with the narrative that we were talking about last week, because the Tokyo RPG Factory games really were that sort of like like the quality of a high quality indie game, you know, where like they were definitely throwbacks with simpler graphical styles, but with like a level of polish and like kind of money behind them that Square Enix could give them. I don't think they were ever like particularly successful, like in terms of sales. I Am Setsuna and Lost Sphere got, you know, ported to like everything. I Am Setsuna was one of the Switch launch games, I believe. And is a game that I picked up and have played maybe like 45 minutes of. But yeah, it's just it seems like an interesting little arm or, you know, subsidiary for a time of Square Enix that they're like, you know what, that experiment is over. We will absorb you back here. And if we ever want, you know, your characters to appear in a Dissidia game or whatever, they can pop up there.
Yeah, I have never played any
of Gaia. Which one of those is the mashup of... of their characters, I don't know.
I've never played any of their games, but to me, it felt like what they were trying to do, the HD 2D team kind of came in and ate their lunch, where it was like, no, we're doing like a throwback RPG type thing, and it will have retro styling, but is still modern. And I feel like they were able to capture the imagination in a way that Tokyo RPG Factory's games never were.
Yeah, that's funny, because the Tokyo RPG Factory, they were doing like classic games that looked modern instead of modern games that looked classic. They had it reversed.
Yeah. And finally, Splatoon 3 has announced the next North American Splatfest, posing the question, what is your favorite day of the weekend?
This is a good question. This is a great question here.
It is a good question, but... you, listener, like myself, might be wondering, aren't there only 2 days of the weekend, and yet three idols in Splatoon 3?
Mm-hmm.
It is true, but they, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are all options. And I thought about this, and I guess I don't disagree, because I feel like Friday night to Sunday afternoon are, like, weekend.
That's the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Because by Sunday night, that's not special anymore.
Right.
Yep. Right. So, I mean, like, obviously, just by like volume of usable good time, Saturday's the answer. Right.
Right. Yeah.
You don't get the Sunday scaries on Saturday.
I guess.
And you don't work Saturday morning. You do work Friday morning.
Right. I guess what Friday has going for it is it's like the maximum amount of time of weekend.
Yeah.
That you have, right? Like, the possibilities are endless on Friday.
Possibilities are endless on Friday, and, like, you're at work, sure, but, like, everyone's got that, like, man, we could just leave right now if we wanted to, kind of, you know what I mean? Like, people are ready
senioritis.
To go.
Yeah,
that's right.
And then
Week senioritis.
Sunday, I don't really know what Sunday has going for it.
I mean, that's where you're going to find all of the religious people, right? Like, they're all going to, they have to, their God commands it, that they represent Sunday in the Splatoon 3 Splatfest.
It's true. Sunday might win in a landslide. February 17th through 19th is when this will all be going down. In Japan, the theme is actually pastry filling based, asking which do you prefer, red bean paste versus custard versus whipped cream. And I have to imagine it's because... in Japan, they don't all go to church on Sunday, which is why the weekend question didn't get posed to them.
In reality, it's got to be because we see red bean paste and we're like, what? Right?
I think you're probably right. I think you're right.
So which of those teams would you be on? I mean, I guess we didn't specify what team we would be on in the weekend rumble either, but.
Oh, I would say Saturday for the weekend rumble.
Saturday for sure.
And I guess I would say custard. I'm going to say custard.
I think I would say custard too. I got to say, I'm envious of that Splatfest theme just because the colors of the ink are all like intuitive, right? Like,
yes.
Whereas like, what's the color of Friday?
Well, the color of Sunday is, of course, pure white like our souls.
Sure, sure. Like the dove representing the Holy Spirit.
Yes,
sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, Mark, let's get out of the news. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Remember, if you're not already in the Discord, you should be in the Discord. Email us at nintendocartridgesociety@gmail.com, and we'll email you an invitation. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8BitBetty. You can get more of his music by going to 8BitBetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ehlers, saying thank you for listening.